Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Okay, hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab, and today...
We're still desperately looking, seeking symmetry, as you say.
Not well.
We have looked at love.
Failed.
Looked at brains.
Failed.
Looked at mirrors.
Failed.
The chemistry of life.
Failed.
So we thought, well, for the last stop on this trip, if we were to go anywhere to find or look for deep unity, a deep oneness and symmetry, maybe...
The beginning.
Yeah, of everything.
Moment zero.
So we found ourselves a physicist. Again, it's Neil deGrasse Tyson. I began with a very, very basic question. If you look at me and I look at you and you seem to be made of stuff and I seem to be made of stuff and here we are and here are tables and chairs, is it a surprise to you in some deep way that we are all here made of stuff?
Yes, it's not so much... Surprise understates it. It's shocking, really. It's shocking.
Huh. What is shocking?
That there's any matter in the universe at all.
Meaning that this conversation shouldn't be happening.
No, it's way deeper than
your
that.
Mouth
right,
shouldn't even
thank you. It's deeper than just whether or not we'd be having this conversation now. It's whether or not any of this would exist. Earth, the galaxy, and the like.
Okay, so if you go back 13.7 billion years ago...
That's Marcelo Gleiser again, the physicist, and he says if you roll back the history of the universe...
No more stars, no molecules, no atoms. If you play the movie backwards now...
All the way to the beginning.
Just after,
you know...
The Big Bang, you have what we call a primeval soup.
This soup was... Actually, it was made of light.
Universe of light. Very high energy.
And out of this energy, this heat, these interactions,
you suddenly get...
What the hell is that?
These are belches, Jad.
Belches?
Belches of matter.
The light is doing this?
Yes. This is what A equals MC squared is all about.
Because energy is just a form of matter.
And vice versa.
I feel like I should know what you're talking about, but I don't.
Okay, let's start a little simpler. There's light all around us. We're in a studio. It's visible light.
Mm-hmm.
So this light has no mass, has energy.
E but no M.
Mm-hmm. Crank up the energy of the light. Go to ultraviolet, X-rays. There's a point in X-rays where you have a high enough X-ray photon. It will spontaneously... turn into a particle. Electrons, in fact.
Oh, so you're saying if you crank up the E, the energy of the light, high enough, it'll suddenly just turn into mass?
That's correct.
So, Jed, just picture the soup really intensely hot, and it's belching out matter.
You know, electrons zooming around.
Photons.
Quarks.
Neutrons.
Neutrinos.
Continuously churning. Churning. Churning.
Over time, all that matter clumps together in more and more complex forms until you finally get us. Sounds very simple, doesn't it, Chad?
Yes, but there's a but coming. I can smell it.
But, and here's the big but.
Knew it.
Back in
1928, 1929,
there was this physicist.
Really young guy.
Paul Dirac. He's doing some math, and he's thinking about this whole business of turning light into matter.
Okay.
Now, he's puzzled by something.
What?
There is a law in physics called the law of conservation of charge, which simply means this.
It rolls off your tongue quite nicely.
Doesn't it?
It does.
So here's what it means.
Whenever you create something, if at the beginning you have zero electric charge, at the end you have to have zero electric charge too. That is, you cannot create electric charge. You have to keep the balance.
If you make something in the universe that has a positive charge or a negative, make an electron, okay? Just make one.
Right now?
Yeah.
Gone.
That electron has a, you may remember this from eighth grade, a negative.
Negative one, baby.
You make two electrons.
There they go.
Now make three electrons.
Woo! Negative three.
Now, if the universe is to stay in balance, you need to have something that has a positive charge. You've got three minuses on one side, and you have nothing on the other side.
Wait a second. If this is true, how would you even make an electron? The sheer fact of creating an electron puts it out of balance.
Well, here's the
fundamental
solution.
Story here is wrong.
Well, no. Paul Dirac thought, well, how about this? What if every time you created an electron, you created an anti-electron?
What?
Every particle could have an equal but opposite anti-particle.
That is, a particle that looks very much the same, but essentially its electric charge is reversed.
It would look the same? Like, really look?
Yes, you'd have to measure their properties to know that they were different.
Is it a mirror image? Or
you might think of it as a mirror image. There's a thing called quantum spin, and it would be spinning the opposite way. But charge is the most obvious difference.
For example, the antimatter cousin of the electron.
Because the electron is a negative charge. This little guy should have a positive charge.
Exactly.
But in every other way, it would be the same.
Right. And
but no one ever seen one. He just thought that there probably would be one.
Yes.
And why did he think this?
Math. It was a solution to his equations, and that's the beauty of theoretical physics. By solving equations, you can sometimes find out about the world, and then, yes, a few years later,
bada bing!
They found the positron.
The antimatter version of the electron.
Oh!
Yeah, no, it's deep.
How did they do that?
Did they actually see it?
Well, particles, they're very tiny, right? You can't really see them. So what you do is you create little systems in the laboratory. You get like a vapor.
And you put the vapor in a tank, he says. And when the electron or the anti-electron shoots through the vapor,
the particle destabilizes the vapor and makes little bubbles, okay? You can see these little bubbles appearing out of nothing.
Wow. Seriously.
It's really an amazing thing.
So you can't see the particle itself, but you can see its shadow.
It's road trip,
yeah.
So then he says, okay, imagine you get this little piece of light and you heat it up really hot so that it spawns, well, as we learned, not one particle, but two.
Matter-antimatter pair.
Put them in the vapor tank.
And if you put a magnet in there, you can tell if it's going to the left or to the right, if it's a positive or a negative charge.
Very clever.
It is cool.
You see two particle tracks that each curl opposite directions, and if they have the same rate of curl, that means they have the same mass.
So if we go back to our picture of the early universe, of the soup, which, and you named all of those particles, does that mean that for every particle that you name, there is its opposite floating around there as well?
Exactly. You have electrons,
anti-electrons,
neutron, anti-neutron,
proton, anti-proton. This is all very beautiful, and you'd say, great, I have a very democratic universe, you know, as many particles and antiparticles, and everybody's happy. Only problem is the following. When an electron and a positron meet,
they will find each other,
and,
bada
bing, and they will annihilate.
You mean they'll find each other because they'll find their original other half?
No, they wouldn't need to.
No,
they
just find another kind. Like,
that's correct.
I see.
That's correct.
So, Jed, now imagine that we're in the very early universe. I am a teeny bit of matter, and you, opposite.
I'm an anti-Krulwich.
An anti-Krulwich. And so the pro-Krulwich is sitting here, and I see you across the haze. Now, I'm positive charge. You're negative charge.
And we are zooming together.
Attract. You see, it doesn't work out too well for us. But you know, wait. This is actually a rather profound puzzle because if Paul Dirac was right and half the universe is matter, the other half the universe is antimatter, and we all bump into each other as we just did, well...
Eventually, I guess we would just become...
We would not be here. Then...
You just blink out and there'd be nothing.
Exactly.
Really nothing. So it's a field of...
Mostly not. Mostly just radiation.
Radiation. Radiation. Radiation. Radiation. Radiation. Radiation. Radiation. Radiation.
It's shocking. It's shocking. It's shocking. It's shocking. It's shocking. It's
shocking. Well, there's something wrong with this theory because we're talking to each other and we're
in
the matter. So something's wrong with this notion.
Yes, and what's wrong is an imperfection in the laws of physics that we know of now and that is responsible for this bias.
Which means what? There was a little more of matter, what we call matter, than antimatter? Or?
Yes, there was, to be precise, to every billion particles of antimatter, we had 1,000,000,001 particles of matter.
Oh my God, really?
Yes.
Wow.
And that's tiny excess of 1 in 1,000,000,000 is enough to create everything that exists now.
One lonely little guy.
We would call that an asymmetry.
So everything we see in the universe, all the stars, all the suns and the moons and the grass and the mountains and us, all the we're the extra stuff.
Yes. We are the result of this asymmetry.
Has anybody dealt with the real question that's provoked here? It's like, why was there more one stuff kind of stuff than the other kind of stuff?
So there you go. That is one beautiful question, but we don't have any final answer yet.
You don't know?
Because you see,
we don't know.
Yeah. We do not know. That's right, which is okay. Not knowing is a wonderful thing in science. Otherwise, you could just retire.
Can I tell you my favorite lawyer joke told to me by a lawyer?
Yeah.
I have to spread this because it's the best one. 98% of lawyers give the other 2% a bad name.
Sorry. Well, that's the go music.
The go music, meaning go away.
Meaning us. Or, here's a different place to go, to our website, radiolab.org, where you can read more about anything you heard in this hour. You can see those amazing Lincoln pics and other things that we've got there on symmetry. And of course, you can subscribe to our podcast.
Which means you get to hear the show, you know, whenever you like.
I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
Thanks for listening.
Radiolab is produced by Jad Abumrad and Brenna Farrell.
Our staff includes Soren Wheeler, Ellen Horn, Tim Howard, Pat Walters, and Lynn Levy.
With help from Jessica Gross and Douglas Smith.
Special thanks to Uri Hassan, Sam Rudman, Abby Wendell,
Sean Carroll, Amy Pack, Joe Gal,
and Natasha Gostwick of StoryNori.com. Okay, hope I passed. Bye.
End of mailbox.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.